Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
You're listening to the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Welcome to Why I Believe. My name is Rick Starr. Our guest today is Gary Toyne. Gary compiled two books that we're going to talk about today, one about mothers and one about fathers. The book titles are Life Lessons from Mothers of Faith and Life Lessons from Fathers of Faith. Wonderful books with a lot of stories about mothers and fathers. Gary, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I think it's only appropriate that we start, if we're talking about mothers and fathers, with some of the stories that you talk about in your books about your own mother and father. Talk about your relationship with your mother and what she taught you. But first of all, let me start with a quote. It's coming from your own book, and you say this: I've come to the conclusion that one of my purposes in early life was to give my mom experiences to build her faith. It seemed that even from an early age, the things I did often forced my mother to her knees.
Well, I was a challenging kid. as it says in the story, just a little background is because my mother didn't grow up in the church. Wasn't really exposed to the church much. When she got married, she did end up getting married in the temple, but it was just not ingrained in her, and she didn't really embrace it. But I mean, she wasn't unfaithful or anything, but it was just that it wasn't part of her life. And she grew inactive, and at a certain point, she had a daughter, and that 5-year-old daughter was my sister, and she ended up dying of polio. The story was that she was taken to the hospital, ended up in an iron lung. She had a little bit of a recovery. My mother left to take care of some business while the crisis seemed to be over. But she took a turn for the worse, and she had to rush back to the hospital. And when she got to the hospital, my sister was dying, and they knew she was going to die, and they wouldn't let my mother be with her. They made her wait in the waiting room until she'd actually passed. Mm. And it was a devastating experience for my mom. It was also a motivation for her to get back into the church so that she could be with her daughter. Mm-hmm. And they ended up going to the temple, as they said, and embracing the gospel. But when I came along, I was in the hospital for cuts and broken arms and bruises, and I had scars. I have scars virtually everywhere. And I was always in the emergency room, and I'm sure for my mother, just the thought of going to the emergency room again was just heartbreaking because she'd been there before with such tragic consequences. So on top of that, I was just a fidgety little kid. I mean, by the time of six, I was the sixth child, and I'm sure she wanted some bookish, smart kid that loved to read, and I was not that. So that was a challenge.
Well, you mentioned in the book that you had two speeds.
Yes.
Fast and stop.
That's it. And I was constantly going. She teased me that I never liked to stop to go to the bathroom because it was just too much time.
She really blossomed later in life than when she was called on a mission.
She did. It's just inspiration that they got called to the Nauvoo mission right as the temple was being built. And they were all a part of just this magical time that was there when the temple was being built. I took my family out there, and here's my mom at the family living center teaching how to make bread in a Bussell oven, make candles, and weave in a loom. Is this my mother? Where did you put her? I've never seen her in this context. She's amazing. She was also the lead at the Lucy Mack home, and she spoke so lovingly and intelligently about Lucy Mack and all of the difficult issues that Lucy Mack faced. My mother just blossomed in this environment. And when she came back from her mission and she bore her testimony, it was incredible to hear this wonderful woman. She's always been a wonderful woman, but to hear her bear her solemn testimony as to God loving her. And she knew it, and she realized that what she was doing was what God wanted her to do.
Mm, that's wonderful. Your book, in your book, the foreword is written by Jane Clayson Johnson. And in the foreword, she mentions this. I wanted to talk a little bit about this because I think it's a process that all of us go through as we become adults and have our own families. It's how we view our children as youth. As teenagers or younger, and then how that view of our parents changes as we grow older. She says, it wasn't until I had a child of my own that I had a deeper appreciation of this unique relationship. Speaking of the relationship between her and her mother, of course. Talk a little bit about that.
She was late to come to the mothering game. I think she was in her mid-30s by the time, and she married into a family that already had two kids, and then they had kids of their own. So she's just an amazing example of faith. She says, you know, this was right for me, and this was the thing that God felt was needed for me. And she was willing to listen to the Spirit and be guided by that and make a very difficult decision to give up a very high-profile job and embrace motherhood. But it was challenging. She admits there's some days, I just don't want to be a mother. Mm-hmm. It's too hard. But she sticks with it, and she does so much giving and serving. I mean, she serves the church. She's a great profile on Mormon.org, and she just does so many wonderful things. But, you know, I give her great credit for her willingness to listen to the Spirit and be guided to do what she knew that God wanted her to do.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, as I look back in my own childhood and how I viewed my parents, and, you know, you have your youthful judgments of your parents, and then as you grow older and have your own kids, you realize, usually, at least in my case, and I don't know if you have the same story for yourself, but the amount of ingratitude you had as a youth.
I have it with my father. I was, you know, it took me a while to come around and figure out my dad. My dad is, I'm like my mother. I'm passive. I do not like confrontation. My dad's just the opposite. You know, he's very strong-willed. Grew up with that generation where, you know, my way or the highway. And and that was off-putting because I'm kind of a free spirit as it is. And, you know, it was kind of hard for me. And, you know, growing up in a small town, I grew up in Huntsville, Utah, small town, you know, my only claim to fame was that I mowed David O. McKay's lawn. You know, that was the coolest thing I could do. It was awesome. But anyway, the issue was, though, that I was just ungrateful. And I told my dad that I have to write about our relationship for this book. And his comments were, why do you want to write about an old crumb bum like me? I mean, that's just a term an 80-year-old would use, of course. But, you know, and it took me a while to, after I'd written a lot of the stories corroborated with many of the people in the book, that I realized, you know, my dad taught me a lot of these lessons. He taught me honesty. He taught me tithing. He taught me attending church, scripture study. He taught me all of these things, and I was never giving him credit for it. Mm-hmm. And I was an adult almost 50 years old. And listen, and it took me that long to figure it out, how ungrateful I was. But I was so grateful that I have my dad around, that I could make good. I wanted a do-over. I wanted to say, look, Dad, I am so sorry for being so ungrateful. You've been an amazing father, and I apologize for all of my ingratitude. And, you know, I when I finally had this aha moment, I took my dad, and, you know, my dad liked to shake hands. You know, how you doing, son? Shake hands. But I couldn't. It wouldn't stand. And I gave him a big hug, and my tears are streaming down my face, and I'm just so grateful that I can touch my dad and hug him and hopefully make good on all my years of ingratitude.
Yeah. I like what you said about wishing you had a do-over.
I do. I did.
You know, and I feel the same. I'm sure a lot of people feel the same emotion as they grow older and they realize all the things their parents have done for them.
Took me a long time, and I'm just maybe an ungrateful person by nature. But, you know, I'm sure glad that God gave me the experience to be able to listen to other people and hear how they just admire their fathers. And, boy, it was a great experience.
You know, you'd mentioned David O. McKay and you mowed his lawn. Let's talk a little bit about his wife, Emma Ray Riggs McKay. And one of the things that she said about raising children, and this quote was written by her son Robert, and he recalls her once saying, "The art of rearing children peacefully and pleasantly is the art of becoming a child again and growing up with them." And I thought that was an interesting commentary on motherhood. It's profound, but yet so simple.
And on top of that, she lived that philosophy. She would He says there was no generation gap between them. She went to movies with them. He recalls, seeing Fatty Arbuckle and going to see Gilbert and Sullivan, HMS Pinafore and the Mikado and all these plays, and just her mother just being so involved in their lives, and how wonderful it was to have a mother who not only laid the law down and kept the rules, but was willing to get down on the ground and play with them and do things that they wanted to do and make sacrifices. What a wonderful example, you know, be a child. What a great advice, I think. What a great advice for any parent. You know, think of it from your, get out of yourself. You know, see it from the view of your children, and you'll be a much better parent.
Her son Robert tells the story of when his father, David O. McKay, was called to be a member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. Tell that story.
Yes, he was called in by President Francis M. Lyman. He was serving as David O. McKay was serving with the Church Board of Education, and when in between conference they met, and he says, "So you're David O. McKay? Well, David O. McKay, the Lord wants you to be a member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles." And of course, he's astounded, and he goes through this whole thing of worthiness, and he says, "All right, we're going to sustain you." And he can't obviously tell his wife in between, and he's just waiting. And then they call him, and Sister McKay just starts crying. She realized the gravity of what was going to happen. She wanted him there, but she knew from that point that she had to share her husband with the church. And that is what a great sacrifice that is. And she probably complained a little bit, but not more than any of us would, I don't think. But certainly she shared her husband for the rest of their life with the church, because he gave so much, traveled so much, was gone so often. And we know his travels are incredible around the world so many times.
Later, when David O. McKay was sustained as a member of the presidency of the church, and his family was congratulating him, I think he wrote something that was very poignant about wives and women in general for, supporting, behind the scenes, their husbands. Why don't you share that with us?
"Often a woman shapes the career of her husband or brother or son. A man succeeds and reaps the honors of public applause when in truth a quiet little woman has made it all possible, has by her tact and encouragement held him to his best, has had faith in him when his own faith has languished, has cheered him with the unfailing assurance, you can, you must, you will. I need not tell my children how fittingly this tribute applies to your mother." What a great tribute it was. And he realized they were a great partnership. And just, it's amazing to see what he's done for the church. And he credits Sister Emma.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, whenever you go to an Eagle Court of Honor, there's great recognition paid to the mother, because she's earned that eagle, and often the father as well, but they've earned that eagle just as well as that young man in most cases, because of their support. And it's much because of the same character traits that President McKay was talking about there.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This is Why I Believe. My name is Rick Starr, and our guest today is Gary Toyne, who compiled two books, one about mothers and one about fathers, and the life lessons learned from both mothers and fathers. Before we talk about fathers, I wanted to ask you, Gary, as you were compiling these two books, what did you learn about mothers and about fathers in general, and their emotions, their approaches to life?
Well, it's interesting you ask that question, because when we started with the father's book, there's so many wonderful lessons. It really is a manual for fathers, to learn what you can do to be a better father. There's opportunities for learning from other men, and they do certain things different. And, I'm a guy, and I kind of think like a guy, and I thought, oh, this is pretty cool. And I open up a story, and I hear about, a father making it an effort to always take his kids out, at least, rotate them every month on a father-son or father-daughter date. What a great idea, I can do that. When I started the mother's book, however, what I realized is something totally different. And it took Jane Clayson to kind of teach me Jean Clayson Johnson about this. She taught me a thing called Mother's Day Syndrome, and I wasn't aware of it, but how much mothers just dislike going to Mother's Day sacrament meeting because they hate hearing about all these angel mothers and how great they are not. Well, it's a different approach, you know. So the mother's book is really – I really wanted to focus on collecting stories from mothers with a just to represent the vast diversity of the church. Mm-hmm. There are single mothers. There are divorced mothers. There's widowed mothers. There are we obviously feature many from the general presidency of the church, the primary and the Relief Society and young women's organizations. But obviously from a perspective of just saying, look, you do not have to be an angel. You can be a faithful mother and not be perfect. You can be a faithful mother and just try and still be wonderfully faithful. And God loves you for just trying. That's really what I really wanted to point out here and let mothers know. We love you. As guys, we love you. We love what you do. We love all of the efforts that you make. Try hard, but please don't compare yourself to other mothers because that's a tool of the adversary to just bring you down.
Yeah. It's interesting as you read the stories by the children of the mothers, every single one of them had something to say about the positive impact their mothers have had on them, regardless of their background or their struggles or that kind of thing.
Case in point is a story from Harry Reid, Senator Harry Reid. Mm-hmm. You know, he says his mother smoked and drank and fought with his father too much. And, some stories that we didn't include in the book about, some of the knockdown, dry-out fights that they had and that, you know, there was no religion in the home. And her religion was a plaque with a quote from FDR on the wall. That was their religion. Mm. But what he gained from her was a sense of confidence that no one else could have given him but his mother. And he realized that, she didn't have anything to be confident of because of her situation. You look at the picture in the book and this the shack that they were living in Searchlight, Nevada. Yet she went out of her way to teach him confidence. So, again, I guess the point is you don't have to be a perfect mom. Yet you can have a great impact, positive impact on your kids. Mm-hmm. You may have made a lot of mistakes in your life. So what? You know what? You can make a positive impact.
Yeah. Very much so. Well, let's talk a little bit about fathers now. You talked a little bit about your relationship with your father. And again, you had mentioned that in both of these books there were various stories from men in politics, in the church, sports, communications, entertainment. Let's talk about a little bit about Vernon Law and the story of honesty that was taught. And again, every one of these children who talked about their fathers, they talk about the values that their parents taught them. And Vernon Law, of course, a famous baseball player from long ago, and his son, Vance Law, also a baseball player. Talk a little bit about
that. He was a pro player. So Vernon was an amazing pitcher and has done some amazing things on the baseball field. When his son would obviously hang around the baseball field and at one point, his mother would give him just a little bit to go get a drink and a hot dog at the baseball games, but not a whole lot. And he wanted more. And he figured out a way that if he was out shagging balls out in the field, that he could take these balls and sell them and make money. Mm-hmm. Well, his father figured out, he's eating pizza and all sorts of things at the game. He's, where are you getting this money? And figured out that he had taken these balls and had collected them, and he had access to the players, and he'd have them sign them. And his father taught him, are these your baseballs? And Vance said, well, in reality, no. You really aren't honest when you're talking about selling things that don't belong to you. Is that really what you want to be remembered by? Is that the reputation you want? And so it was a lesson for him. And, it may be there for the taking. Yes, maybe nobody will ever know, but God will know, and I'll know. Mm-hmm. Honesty really makes a difference.
Great lesson. You also talk about a story from Jerry Mullen, who went on to become a great film producer. working with Steven Spielberg. But as he was growing up in his home, his father endured many, many struggles. And yet Jerry talks about all the lessons that he learned from his father, who remained faithful despite the struggles in employment and divorce and all kinds of things.
Yeah, Jerry Mullen is an interesting guy. He obviously has a great legacy of working with Steven Spielberg and as producing, you know, incredible movies that we all are aware of. I think Schindler's List being among them, Rain Man, Jurassic Park. I think he was involved in most all of these big blockbusters that Jerry or that Steven Spielberg was involved with. So he, but he grew up around the movie theater business as a child, and his father and mother owned a cafe right next door to a big theater down in Southern California. One thing led to another, and their parents got a divorce, and so he ended up moving back to Montana, where they were from, starting businesses and trying to get things going, and just one failure after another.
This is his father.
This is his father, mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. And, you know, it was difficult for his father to deal with having his children not around him, and as they were growing up, it was a difficult thing. I think at one point, his dad and his mom and the six children, they moved to Southern California, and again they started this business outside of Republic Studios. I think it was called the Blue Onion. But in 1951, they were divorced, and his father was working for Douglas Aircraft down there, and just the struggles that they had being a divorced family. And each weekend, Jerry ended up joining the Marines, but each weekend he would go up and he got together with his father in a little restaurant and they just sat and talked, and just the dedication his father had to being an influence in his son's life. His dad never made him feel like he was a burden. Never, he said here in the book, he says, "My dad never felt it necessary to burden me with his own personal woes, so our conversations were generally about me and my adventures, about the girl of my dreams, and especially about my brothers and sisters, how much we missed being there for them on a daily basis." His dad ultimately remarried and right now moved back to Montana. But I think that's a great lesson. You know, sometimes families aren't ideal and they don't work out the way we hope, but you still make the best. And I think his dad is one of those people who endures and endured to the end.
Enduring, yeah. You also tell the story about somebody we may not all know, Sandra Stallings Jenkins' father. Talk a little bit about the story, and you told me this story before we started recording, about roots going deep.
Sandra is a personal friend of mine. She grew up in Huntsville with me, actually Eden, to be exact. Mm-hmm. Their family they owned a dairy farm up there. Sandra's a great writer. She's written for The Ensign and done many projects, and just a great writer. But she tells the story about growing their family garden, and they'd go on Memorial Day and plant the seeds, but they wouldn't water the corn. They'd water it once and they'd let it germinate, but they waited until the leaves started to droop in July before they'd water it, and she couldn't figure out why. What did my dad have against the corn that he would make the corn suffer so much? Well, then she figured out that what he was trying to do was make the corn grow deep roots, so when the wind blew hard, the corn would stand. And she likened it to maybe the Lord was wanting this corn to be grounded, rooted, and established. And what a great lesson that is for her, that the Lord wants her to be grounded, rooted, and established. And maybe there's times when he withholds blessings from us and doesn't give us what we want so that we can become more grounded, rooted, and established. And she ends this in a perfect way, and I can't summarize it. I'm just going to read it because she says this: "I have learned not to mind so much the dry spells in my life, because I know the master gardener will send water in his own due time. And when it comes, it will be, as Elder Maxwell calls it, the Malachi measure. There will not be enough room to receive it." Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, that is a great lesson to learn. There's one more story I'd like to cover before we end our program today, and that's the story of Bruce Lindsay. Bruce has been an anchor here in Salt Lake since way back in 1978, and his father was also well-known in this area, was in politics and that kind of thing, and did a lot of other things, a professor down at BYU. But the principle that he was taught by his father was always this very simple thing, and I remember hearing this from my mother growing up, the simple principle of remember who you are. Talk a little bit about that and how that can affect us in our lives.
I think those four words is what had in Bruce's life has given him the greatest impact. Those words are remember who you are. It's important that all of the things that you do, all of the lessons and all of the trials that you face throughout your life, it's important to remember who you are and remember where you came from. Working to build your reputation is something that you should be involved in your entire life. And everything you do, no matter what you do, affects your reputation, good or bad. Mm-hmm. What an important lesson. I'd never really thought about this lesson, but it is so true. And you think about Bruce Lindsay. For those who are in the Salt Lake area who may recognize him, he's actually ending his career here in the next few months to serve a mission in Australia. Mm. And what a great reputation he has. His father, I mean, he would have people come up and say, "Are you Richard Lindsay's son?" And he thought that was the greatest thing because everyone knew that Richard Lindsay was a man of integrity. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to be like his father and have that same reputation. What a great lesson.
Yeah. And there's a lot that he talks about in honoring the name that he's been given and carrying that forward. Great principles to learn. Well, Gary, thank you for being with us today on Why I
Believe. Thank you for having me.
These are great stories and encouraging. They're very encouraging to read and understand, you know, how we can, through little things in our own lives, how we can have an effect on our own children. They brought a great realization to me about the gratitude that I have for my own parents and the impact that they had on me.
I agree, and I appreciate hearing that because to me it was cathartic to be able to really write and think about my parents in such a way that I had to contemplate about what life lessons they taught me. Actually, in each book, there's a section in the back that allows for people to write their own personal memories and reflections on their parents. Mm-hmm. So it's a personal thing, and I think that for me I had the opportunity, but. I think everyone should do that, whether it's the book or not. Take a chance. Take an opportunity to sit down, write about what you learned from your parents. It can only be good.
Great. Thank you for being with us, Gary.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Why I Believe on the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thank you for joining us.